Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And good morning, everybody. Thank you for being here with us today. I'm hungry, so I brought my friends with me today to talk about food and where to be when you're hungry. So let's see who we have with me today. I have Reed Owen from Red Pup Kinchin. Good morning, Reed.
Good morning.
Reed is the executive chef from Red Pup Kinchin, the Tuscan-inspired restaurant on the downtown mall. We have Dale Ford. Hey, Dale.
Good morning.
Boar's Head Inn executive chef, where they have four on-site restaurants, including the Four Diamond Old Mill Room. And stuck in the corner, but I can see him, Jerome Talvitz. Good morning, Jerome.
Good morning, Rick.
Good morning, Bavarian chef. Chef owner, chef and owner, authentic German restaurant in Madison County since 1974. Where are we at now? That's 44 years, or we'll be celebrating your 44.
On April 1st, we will be, yes.
Wow, that's a long time.
Thank you.
So we have Reed and Dale and Jerome with us today because we're going to be talking about food. Although, did anybody bring any food with them?
We thought you'd have it here.
You're hosting.
Ow! Burn.
This wasn't Feed the Chef Day?
I've been burned already. But we are going to be talking about Restaurant Week throughout the hour. Restaurant Week coming up here in Charlottesville in just a few weeks here, beginning January 19th through the 28th. A handful of restaurants, only 39 participants this year. But we also want to take advantage of having three chefs in the kitchen. I've always wanted to do this show where we're going to do questions and answers. I put out there on social media and friends and family, ask questions of the chefs. And you're welcome to call in and ask questions of the chefs. 434-284-9470. That's the number here to the WPVC studio. 947-434-284-9470. Dial up. Ask the chef a question about food, how to cook something, a problem that you've had, a suggestion, just food and restaurants in general. Of Reed Owen, Jerome Talvitz, Dale Ford, this is your chance. When do you get three chefs in the same room and want to talk about food, especially on a Sunday morning? My goodness, that doesn't happen very often. So here we are on Sunday morning wake-up call. We are going to talk about Restaurant Week throughout the hour. But first, we're going to start with a question. You know, before he left, David from Homegrown had a question, so we'll start with his in case he's still out there listening. Did you hear his question? I mean, he tossed that out there. How to best way to bake a squid? Is that even something people want to do? I've only had fried calamari.
Bacon, it's unique.
Yes?
I would think you'd want a lot of liquid with it.
Yeah.
It needs to get tender.
Yes. Is that something, I mean, percentage of people who would even try that? Or is that just a joke question?
I think it was more of a joke question.
Yeah, you wouldn't do that. As a chef, you wouldn't suggest that?
I personally wouldn't.
No.
I don't know about
I don't think I've ever served it.
Not typically. I typically grill it.
All right.
I'll grill a squid.
Grilled squid.
Mm-hmm.
I love grilled squid.
That's the way to go?
Yeah.
Yes.
Grill it versus frying it?
It's got to be a quick cooking method, which is why you fry it generally. Because
you need a lot of heat.
Yeah, you need a lot of heat, and if you overcook it, it gets a little bit rubbery.
All right. So let's move on. David, I hope you heard that. Don't bake it, grill it, or fry it. If you're really not sure you want it, you gotta fry it first to make sure that you even like that. But it's so easy to over-fry it. Then you get the rubber band texture.
Exactly.
All right. So, again, you can call up with your questions, 434-284-9470. Here's a question that I got from Leah. Leah wants to know, have you tried the tearless onion? And what are your thoughts on genetically improved varieties of fruits and vegetables? Dale, let's start with you. Dale Ford from the Boar's Head Inn.
I'll tell you, there's nothing like a good cry from an onion. Depending upon which way the hood system is pulling in the kitchen, whether or not you're going to have those tears. Genetically modified? I would have to tell you that I think that natural food's awfully good for you. I'm going to manufacture it once I get into the kitchen. Having to manufacture it before they put it in the ground, that's probably not the highest thing on my things I'm looking for as a chef. But I don't think I've cut into a tearless onion yet.
Reed?
I'd have to agree that Dale said it the best. You don't really want to mess with food too much. You want to have a just regular good old onion, and you're going to do whatever you're going to do to it in the kitchen itself.
Jerome?
I mean, years of cutting onions, it's something that is part of kitchen life, and I think it's a... I would not want a tearless onion, I don't think. I don't know how they would make it tearless.
But, so none of you have tried the tearless onion yet?
I saw the
headline about that, I guess, sometime in the... Leah, I guess Leah, I don't know if she read more into it than I did. I saw the headline, and that's about all I saw. But she also asked something about genetically improved varieties and fruits. I guess you can read that as the GMO that Dale touched on. But what's the difference between genetically modified and just doing it by taking one variety of corn and putting it with another variety of corn until you get it, but not doing it in the lab, but doing it at the farm?
I think there's something to be said for getting baby fennel or, baby ferns, things like that to work with, rather than dealing with the large process where you're going to take away a lot. So there are a lot of new foods coming out that you're working with, but I definitely would steer towards staying natural and staying fresh.
Right. If you think about how much corn it's going to take, genetically modified corn, to feed a community, you're not going to get it off of one plant. Right, so that's quite a bit of effort and quite a bit of work into that. Not sure that the end result for me as a chef is going to be something high on my list. Right, I think just what Chef said. If you have something a little bit more of a baby fern, baby fennel, you're going to harvest those products pretty quick. To get that corn to go to harvest, you're 90 days. You're 90 day into that planting, cropping, harvesting. Genetically modified, I think you might be able to find a better product out there than looking for that product in the market.
Okay, Leah, hope you heard that. Again, you can always go back for those of you who come in later in the show to find your question had already been asked or wonder if your question had already been asked, SeaVillePodcast.com.
That's a great question, though.
I hope you can say that about all our questions today with our guests today, Dale Ford from the Boar's Head Inn, Reed Owen from Red Pump Kitchen, and Jerome Talvitz from the Bavarian Chef. Again, you're welcome to call up with your question if you'd like, 434-284-9470. Another question that we have today, I have about 15 or 20 here, so I'm trying to go through them and not necessarily in order, which may be silly of me. Here's one from Gina. What would each of you say is the most important spice in the kitchen, not counting salt? My first part of that would be, Gina seems to assume that salt is the most important spice. Would you agree? And then to fulfill her question, what would be the most important spice in the kitchen, not counting salt? So, Reed, you want to start?
I mean, I'd have to go with the obvious one, pepper. That's one of your most important spices in the kitchen besides salt. Salt is clearly very important. It's what brings out flavor in a lot of stuff. So, but my personal favorite in the kitchen right now is smoked paprika. I love smoked paprika. It's just got a really nice smokiness to it, a little bit of sweet, and it just adds good flavor to fried chicken and pretty much anything I use.
Would you say that, I mean, Gina seems to be putting forth the idea that salt is the most important spice. Would you say that?
I pretty much, yes. I would say yes, but I wouldn't actually even classify it as a spice. When I think of salt, I think it's a no-brainer. You're always using salt. Okay. Salt is a must. I don't think of it as an extra spice you're throwing into something.
Jerome?
Yeah, I'd have to agree totally. Without salt, to enhance all the other flavors coming out, you need that as your base. And pepper, of course, is the obvious second choice. The counter, the salt, the pepper is, especially now with the new food trends, I think the more fiery flavors coming out, you see all these interests in various peppers coming up, the Carolina Reaper, the Caribbean Reds. I'm personally would love experimenting with those, trying to incorporate them into dishes without overpowering the clientele. But everyone now is looking for more exotic, more spice nowadays. So that's why we try to incorporate those into our newer dishes flavors.
Well, in a German restaurant like the Bavarian Chef, what might you go with after salt and pepper then?
Oh, smoked paprika we use quite a bit.
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay.
All the paprikas we use quite a bit in our paprika goulash, our Hungarian goulash soup, paprika rahmsoße, which is a paprika cream sauce. I use smoked paprika, so I'm very much in that line also.
Okay, Dale Ford from the Boar's Head Inn.
Well, I would have to agree with both chefs.
All right, you guys we're not going to have any reality show fights here at this
right.
point.
No, I think salt is in every household in America, right? So it is the most dominant ingredient out there. I would have to think that there's salt sitting in your cupboard at home. There's salt sitting in mine.
There's also smoked paprika in my cupboard at home now.
Exactly. So in this type of the season, this time of the year, I mean, Hungarian goulash is a fantastic winter dish, right? I mean, it's being made in our kitchen. I would agree with the chefs that smoked paprika probably right now is a great all around flavor.
So I'm going to go to the next question from Lynn, which is, what's the next big new thing in the restaurant world? And I follow that up because I'm wondering if smoked paprika is coming up as this third spice after salt and pepper, because it is a big new thing, sort of, rather than just the best spice, right? It's being mentioned here as, oh, after salt and after pepper, it's smoked paprika. Would that have been the same answer given 2 years ago? Will it be the same answer given 2 years from now? And so that's my question. That's why I say, what is the next big new thing in the restaurant world?
Well, I think our clientele and the consumers are so curious at the moment as to food that they have that they're looking for anything exotic and new. Vegetables used in different ways, for instance, riced cauliflower instead of breadcrumbs, bringing in the different kohlrabi, doing kohlrabi spirals rather than cooking them whole. There's so many different options. And it's just a total curiosity, whether it's a smoked paprika, a pepper, like I said earlier, a vegetable, just new ways to use standard foods that we have, I think is what's coming up in the next year. That's my personal take on it, what I'm looking at. But
I'd say I'd have to agree. I mean, it's not about one thing being the next big thing. It's about what you can do to all these different things.
Well, I think And I'm not going to put this in any sort of like last year and the year before, but I think back to when pomegranate juice or pomegranates were the thing. And then in the last couple of years, it was coconut oil and coconut water was the thing. And I would say that currently or quite recently, it has been cauliflower rice. I mean, I think at several grocery stores, they continuously run out of, you can't even keep up with cauliflower rice, because there's such a diabetic issue in our country that people are having to switch to cauliflower rice as a substitute. And so I don't know how they tie together in terms of dietary needs and chef use, but that seems to be part of how they go together as, you know, somewhat of a big new thing. But that's, you know, I think that may be where Lynn, or that's how I envision Lynn asking the question of big new thing. Pomegranate and coconut water, et cetera. So, Dale, do you have a different answer than what Jerome and Reed have?
Well, you know, I think part of us as chefs, we have to identify the trends, follow some trends.
Right.
You know, I think you could say that sriracha was probably that ingredient the past couple of years. And it's look, the consumer is so much more educated today about food than ever before. It's certainly mainstream, and on every single social media post you're going to find is a picture of somebody's food, the flavor that goes with it or the attraction that goes with it. Some of the trends right now are saying that you know, that ethnic food of the Mediterranean area is a pretty hot trend right now. You know, as much as you would say that the chickpea can be used in so many different ways, the chickpea is an ingredient that it's pretty commonly used in a lot of different styles.
18 minutes after the hour here with our guest, Reed Owen from Red Pump Kitchen on the downtown mall in Charlottesville. Dale Ford from the Boar's Head Inn just outside of Charlottesville on 250. And Jerome Tovitz from the Bavarian Chef up Route 29 North in Madison County. We're going to take a break. We'll come right back. We're going to ask them about their items and what their menu is for Restaurant Week. And we'll talk about Restaurant Week and as a whole. And then we'll get back to a few more questions and answers. Hang tight. And back in action here on Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, questions and answers with the chefs. And Restaurant Week coming up in Charlottesville, January 19th through the 28th. 39 participants this year. New price points, $25 and $35. Some new participants, three-notched Craft Kitchen and Brewery, the Whiskey Jar, Cardinal Hall, just a few of those. $1 per meal goes to the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. You can always go online and check out the menus and the various restaurants. Find the menus at www.cvillerestaurantweek.com. That's c-villerestaurantweek.com. And everything will be printed in the January 17th issue of Seville Weekly. Gentlemen, who wants to go first and talk about what is going on at your restaurant, since you were the three kind enough to come in, the three chefs who could make time on your busy Sunday mornings?
I'll be.
All right, Jerome Tovitz from the Bavarian Chef.
So for our restaurant week this year, as always, we always try to take the traditional German cuisine that your Oma would have made, the comfort foods, and we also try to blend it with contemporary food trends. To start with, we are doing Oma's sauerkraut soup, a very nice hearty sauerkraut soup with Landjäger sausage, has that little smoked flavor. We do a little smoked paprika in it also, as we were talking about. From our street food trend, We are doing traditional currywurst selection, three of our sausages with a nice homemade curry sauce. Then we are also doing a lighter smoked salmon salad. We do a lot of smoked fish in Germany. Then for main courses, we are working with braised short ribs, which I love to do this time of year. We're going to do that with au gratin potatoes and a nice dunkel beer sauce because we braised it in one of our dark beers. We are working with a Kochfisch, which is a German traditional grandmother's dish where you cook the fish directly in white wine and cream and dill, and we're serving that over a mixture of braised leeks and Yukon Gold potatoes. For desserts, we have a nice selection from years ago. We used to have the fondue pot, so we brought back our chocolate fondue that we used to do.
Ooh,
a little chocolate truffle
fondue
with fresh fruit around. But I brought in my mother's Steckapfelkuchen, which is a sunken apple cake that we're doing with homemade whipped cream. An orange cranberry bread pudding with a whiskey sauce. So we're trying to stay contemporary yet traditional. So we always try to give you that welcoming feeling like you're coming into Oma's house.
Well, I see I'm buying a ticket. Gentlemen, Reed, Dale.
So at Red Pump, I'm developing a menu that's, they've either been on the menu before or they are on currently. It's just a selection of all of my favorites over the past year that I'm trying to highlight with the best produce that I can get in wintertime. One of my biggest favorites is the meatballs, just because it was a big part of my life with my grandfather, and everybody loves him. I have a tattoo on my arm for him, for the meatballs.
Awesome.
That's a big fan favorite. We're also serving our a la carte menu, the full menu, all week long. With this, I get to choose all my favorites, and that's on a side menu you can come in and enjoy. In addition to that, we have a couple winter items with our salmon with a winter squash caponata. Caponata is classic Italian, normally made with eggplant, capers, balsamic vinegar. I'm doing a rendition on that with winter squash. Right now it's butternut squash. It'll probably be acorn squash on the menu next week. And that's just going to be served with some pine nuts, dried currants, capers, a little red wine vinegar, over a bed of cannellini bean puree.
Excellent. Let's see. I have this in front of me, if I can find it fast enough. Red Pump Kitchen is a $35 participant. Boar's Head Inn is a $35 participant. We'll get that menu in just a second. And Bavarian Chef must be a $35 participant as well. So all the menus that you're hearing today, $35 per person to buy a ticket and set up the menu. And again, you can go to c-villerestaurantweek.com to see the full menus and learn how it works. Dale Ford, executive chef at the Boar's Head Inn, you want to tell us the menu there?
Certainly. Well, thanks so much for having us today, right? I mean, listening to the chefs talk.
Makes you want to buy a ticket to each of their restaurants.
Yeah, I'm quite hungry already. It's great for me to be here simply because this is quick inspirational moments, right? I don't get the opportunity to sit with two other chefs, so thanks for making that happen. Look, at Boar's Head, We're doing some very similar things that we do all year around, and that's we're sourcing some great ingredients from as many local area places that we can, and trying not to really do too much to them. We're going to braise some great short ribs. We're going to do a take on a paella dish, but turn that into a pasta paella. A great hearty cannellini bean soup as a first course. And our pastry chef has put together a couple of great pastries, a flourless chocolate torte and a very traditional take on a creme brulee for us. We look forward to the opportunity to cook for the community.
I'm excited. And again, Seville Restaurant Week. There's a dash between the C and the V. C-VilleRestaurantWeek.com. We'll come back to that a little later in the hour. Our guest today, Jerome Talvitz from the Bavarian Chef, Dale Ford from the Boar's Head Inn, Reed Owen from Red Pump Kitchen. All from our local community, three of the 39 participants in C-Ville Restaurant Week. If you have a question, you're welcome to call in 434-284-9470. But let's get back to taking advantage of the knowledge of our three chefs here. Sunday morning wake-up call. This is Rick Moore. I have a question for the Bavarian Chef.
Yes, sir.
A question that came in from Anthony. So let's see. So, Jerome, although your restaurant is one of my top three favorites, does it get tiring to become so well known and then have to make the same dishes for decades?
Well, I think, you know, we have our traditional menu that we have been serving for decades, but we get so creative with our specials and stay with food trends with our specials. And that's why I absolutely love doing Restaurant Week. It gives us a chance to create an entire menu of items that we don't have on our regular menu. It forces me to, or it gives me the opportunity to have welcome new guests in, new faces, to give them the Bavarian Chef experience. And, you know, every day is a new day in the restaurant business. And like you said, there are always new food trends to go with. So, no, to answer your question, I do not get bored with this. I've been doing this for over 40 years, and I still love just about every minute of it.
It's crazy that, and, you know, that's a great question, Anthony, because you see the menu, especially for a restaurant that is, I mean, in our area, it's a famous restaurant. Famous for what it does. I mean, it is. It's a German style restaurant, and not to. But it's famous for that food.
Well, we are. I feel like we are unique in the area. We do our own thing. You know, everyone has some German history. They've traveled there. Their family was from there. Their military was there. So everyone has some kind of a tie to Germany, and we just love bringing a little bit of it to this area.
And I think that's a great question from Anthony to give you a chance to talk about that. So good question, Anthony.
Thank you.
What else do I have? I have a question from Rhonda. Where is a good place for the average home cook to learn good knife skills? So, Dale, let's start with you on that one.
Where's a place for them to learn good knife skills?
That's what it says. Where is a good place for the average home cook to learn good knife skills?
In their own kitchen, practicing. You know, those tearless onions we talked about earlier, that's a great opportunity. Maybe not the tearless onion, but, you know, that's... if you think about cooking, growing up in that industry, cutting onions with family and friends around a table, that's the best place that you're going to get that experience. Invite some people over and cook for them.
What if, Reed, I'll throw this out to you. And I would agree, Dale, not that my agreement would make any point to this conversation, but what if somebody is always doing something wrong? I mean, and so all you're doing is continuously, you know, yes, you're working at home, and so you're continuing to, you know, invite people over, but your knife skills are just repetition of doing it the wrong way. So, Reed, is there a, you know, do you have an addition to that comment?
So I'd have to agree with Dale that it's the best thing to do is just practice over and over again, and yet they could be doing something wrong with a technique that they could be doing better. But eventually you'll pick it up. The first people that started cutting things with knives eventually picked it up and mastered the skill. But if you have any questions about tips that will, like, help you out, I would say ask a chef. Ask somebody that does it all the time. Like, little things you can do to keep your fingers safe, little ways to hold the knife that keeps it steadier, and, like, the way that you just rock your knife very gently and smoothly. Let the knife do the work. Don't put too much effort into it, because eventually you'll just end up cutting yourself. And always have a sharp knife. A dull knife is much more dangerous than a sharp knife.
Definitely.
Where did you guys learn this? I mean, I'm assuming that each of you have been doing this long enough that you probably learned it in the kitchen or from a parent or from a coworker. But where do you send somebody today? I would think that in the kitchens that you work in, they're large enough that you must have hired someone who didn't come in with wonderful knife skills. Do you send them? Do you bring them next to you or next to somebody else who has good knife skills? Do you put them in front of the computer with a YouTube video on? I mean, what do you do?
It's constant supervision. I mean, we bring in new people, and I am constantly saying, keep the knife away from your fingers, keep your thumb tucked behind your forefingers. I'm constantly on them to teach them, and you know, it takes a week or so for them to get proficient, not great, but proficient, and soon they are very good with knife skills. So it's just a matter of we teaching the people who know, teaching the new people. So give them simple things to start with, and
which ones are simple? Carrots versus onions?
Oh, I think carrots are difficult. When I was an apprentice, I chopped my thumb off with a right. slipping on a carrot.
Carrots are definitely difficult.
They are extremely hard.
They're round and roll around.
They're round. They roll around, and the blade just doesn't hit them quite. Personally, they're one of the hardest things.
They're dense.
I hate carrots.
Know, mushrooms are easy. Celery is easy. But carrots are probably the hardest. One of the hardest things to do.
So
we cut a lot of red cabbage at the restaurant. Red cabbage is very easy, I feel. So
I went to PVCC here. They have a culinary program in town. I'm not sure if you can just take one class or you have to do the whole program, but that's where I really honed my knife skills in, because every single day, the first hour of class was just chopping 10 onions, 10 carrots, mushrooms, learning every knife skill. I had to do them perfectly every single time, or you had to go back and start over. So normally, if I have an employee that comes in and doesn't really have the best knife skills, and I need 10 pounds of caramelized onions, I put a 10-pound bag of onions in front of them, and I say, here's how you do it, here's how you do it safely, and good luck. And I come back in about 5 minutes and see their progress, and then I'll give them some tips, pointers, whatever you got to do. But sitting there and chopping 10 pounds of onions every single day will definitely get you there.
All right, Rhonda, thank you for a great question. It led to a great part of conversation here. Sunday morning wake-up call, 33 minutes after the hour, as we're talking with Chefs Jerome Tovitz, Dale Ford, and Reed Owen. Question and answer for the chefs and some conversation about Restaurant Week that starts January 19th to the 28th. Find some new price points this year. $25 and $35 from 39 different participants. You can go to C-VilleRestaurantWeek.com and check out the menus from all the different restaurants that are participating, with your $1 per meal goes to the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. Reed, I think it was you, said something about eggplant earlier in the hour. Here's a question from Chris. My wife is trying to improve our diets and now loves eggplants, and I don't. It's bitter and squishy. Are there alternatives to suggest, or is there a way to suggest removing the bitterness and adding firmness? So we'll start with you, and then, gentlemen, any other suggestions or additions to the conversation about eggplant from Chris.
Eggplant is a very unique vegetable, I would say. I mean, there's not really anything you can do to change the consistency of it, like, for the better. When you cook eggplant, it will get mushy on you. I was talking about eggplant caponata earlier. What I do is I chop that up very finely, and then I fry it. It kind of gives it this nice crispy and crunchiness to it. And then I put it in my caponata, so it's not quite as mushy. But what I would say the best method for cooking any eggplant would be to fry it, because it adds that texture, the crispy texture on the outside. And when you bread it and you salt it and you season it well, it doesn't quite taste as bitter. I love eggplant parmesan, so I always bread it, fry it, and then I put it in a casserole, bunch of cheese, and delicious red sauce. Like, if you don't like eggplant, the solution would probably be to put it in something where you don't really taste much of the eggplant.
A lot of times when I've had eggplant Parmesan and I'm okay with it, I don't seem to feel as bad about it as Chris does, but it seems to always have such, people seem to slice it in such a thick manner that it never seems to be quite done in the middle, or it's, even if you fry it, that the texture on the outside is, doesn't seem to match what you get left over on the inside. Suggestions on that? I mean, is that the way it's supposed to be?
Well, I'll tell you the, you know, the, so the peel on the eggplant, a little hard to get through, right? There are multiple things you can do with them. Salt certainly helps, right? You could peel that eggplant, slice it maybe a half inch thick, salt it, which is a quick cure. It'll start to bring some moisture to the surface. That will help change the consistency of the product when you go to eat it. And then preferably a dry heat method or submerged into hot vat of oil always helps. But it's versatile. There's a lot of things he could do with it, right? It could certainly go into a lasagna, of a vegetable lasagna, and you can use that versus using the actual pasta. Multiple things. I like it as baba ganoush, roasted and pureed and filled with some fantastic flavor and garlic, and a lot of different ways to cook it.
I'm thinking maybe his wife could switch to using zucchini, cut it into the same size as she would the eggplant, and maybe he would like that better. It's got a nicer consistency for him, and you know, you can bread it. You can do anything you do with the eggplant with a nice piece of zucchini.
Better aftertaste.
Yeah.
There you go, Chris. You wanted to know the, what does it say here? Alternatives to suggest. There you go. Zucchini. Here's a question directly to Dale. For the Boar's Head Inn chef, will you tell us the recipe or special notes for the peanut soup?
I'll tell you. We make peanut soup probably 3 times a week, so it's roughly about 5 gallons every recipe. And it's been an item there that has been so popular throughout the years. It's a fantastic, fantastic recipe. It is totally vegan. I mean, there is no animal byproduct in that recipe at all, and that's hard to say for making 5 gallons of an ingredient or 5 gallons of an item that you can say is totally vegan free, gluten free. I think some of that popularity comes because of those. It feeds those two purposes as well. It's a lot of peanuts, I'll tell you that.
Are they all hand-shucked, hand-shelled?
Some of them.
Yeah. All right, that's thank you. That was question was from Laura. Sorry, Laura, I can't get any more out of Dale Ford, Boar's Head Inn executive chef. Can't get any more out of him than that. Not quite 40 minutes after the hour, as we do questions and answers with our guest today, Dale Ford, Boar's Head Inn executive chef. Reed Owen, executive chef from the Red Pump Kitchen on the Downtown Mall, and Jerome Talvitz, owner and chef from the Bavarian Chef up Route 29 in Madison County, and been there since 1974. Be right back. All right, back in action here with the chefs. I don't know why Dale wouldn't give that up. I mean, the Boar's Head Inn has nothing to lose by giving away one of their signature recipes. all right, don't forget, we are here. One of the reasons the chefs are here is for Restaurant Week. Boys and girls. So, Restaurant Week, Charlottesville Restaurant Week, January 19th through the 28th. You can buy a ticket for each person, $25 or $35, depending on which restaurant you choose to visit. Some of the $25 restaurants this year: Bang, Burton's Grill, Fig, Fitzroy, Junction, Cardinal Hall, Maharaja, which is right across the street from the restaurant here, Melting Pot, Mono Loco, Shadwell's, Three Notched Craft Kitchen, The Whiskey Jar. Again, I'm not reading everybody. I apologize. Some of the $35 participants, The Bavarian Chef, Bizou, Boar's Heads, Old Mill Room, Bonefish Grill, C&O, Downtown Grill, Hamilton's, Maya, Orzo, Red Pump Kitchen, 10, Zocalo. Again, that's not all of them. My apologies for those who I rapidly skipped over. But you can go and check out the website at c-villerestaurantweek.com. You can also pick up your Seaville Weekly on the 17th of January and get all the information and see the menus, find out how it works. Don't forget, $1 per meal goes to the Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. That's really what it's all about. $1 per meal to Blue Ridge Area Food Bank, and you getting some tremendous food at a much lower price than you might normally get to, because the restaurants and the chefs are also contributing their time to help Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. All right, gentlemen, Reed and Dale and Jerome here with us in the studio. A number of questions that I still haven't gotten to, so let's see what we can do to get through these. From Laura Ann, what are your thoughts about using a slurry instead of a roux? Who wants to tell us the difference between the two?
A slurry is typically made from, not typically, it is made from a cornstarch and water, or if you're using an ingredient that is of the same viscosity in the recipe itself, you can use that to moisten to moisten the cornstarch, yeah. And then you add that to a hot boiling liquid, and it'll start to thicken up as that reaction takes place. A roux is done by using butter and flour, equal parts. And then you just you cook that down, and you can make a blonde roux, a brown roux, or a, my personal favorite, a black roux, dark roux, because I like gumbo a lot. But that just depends on how long you cook it down, and it adds a different depth of flavor to the recipe itself. I will always go with the roux, personally, just because I like butter. But cornstarch slurries are a good alternative for people that are gluten-free, for example. Just because you don't have to add any flour to thicken up the dish itself.
At the Bavarian Chef, we switched years ago to using mainly slurries just to avoid the entire gluten-free, to open our entire menu to gluten-free customers and say, no, you're safe having our base sauces. All of these things are safe for you to have because we're using the slurry.
Okay. Dale?
You know, it's item specific for us. I'm a fan of that roux as well. I mean, if you're making, let's just say, sausage and gravy for biscuits and gravy, that's a flour based roux for me, right?
I mean, me too. Yes.
So it's different different items, okay. Different recipes, different techniques.
All right. Is it? This is from Dad. This cracks me up. Is it true that chefs hate ketchup as a condiment, only as an ingredient? I think the way I read the question is that, you know, don't put ketchup on my food.
Great with meatloaf, right?
I didn't send this out there for you to put ketchup on it.
Typically, in our restaurant, we don't support that, but I like ketchup. I grew up with ketchup. A lot of people grew up with ketchup in their refrigerator. I like it on a good French fry. Yeah. And like you said, on meatloaf, nothing quite like
that. I love curry ketchup, typical German street food.
Curry ketchup.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's, fantastic.
That for
stuff.
Us is.
Okay. Let's see. 45 minutes after the hour. Again, our guest today, Dale Ford. He's a Boar's Head Inn executive chef. Boar's Head Inn, 4 on-site restaurants, including the 4 Diamond Old Mill Room, which will be the Old Mill Room, is the participant in the restaurant week coming up. Reed Owen. He's the executive chef at the Red Pump Kitchen, Tuscan-inspired food on the downtown mall. And Jerome Talvitz, Bavarian chef. He's the owner and the chef, the authentic German food in Madison County since 1974. All three chefs here today on a Sunday morning. From Emily, what's the big difference between a blender and a food processor? If I can only afford to have one, since money is an issue, which do I get?
I think the processor, personally.
Yeah, I would say processor.
Because you can do both. You can chop an onion in there and stop it, and you can blend. If you keep running it, it will blend. So I think the food processor would be more instrumental for you. There's so many things you can do in the processor with the different attachments.
Can I make margaritas in my food processor?
I think you could. I don't see any reason you couldn't.
Right? Yes. Frozen.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm more of a margarita on the rocks dude, but, you know.
I would say food processor as well.
Okay.
I'd have to agree that it's most versatile in an at-home kitchen. But I love my Vitamix.
Vitaprep, yeah?
No, I love them. They get everything smooth.
All right. Let's see. Oh, here's one from Kitty, and this goes to Reed. Red Pump Kitchen has a chef's table with wine pairings and special cocktails. Does today's chef have to know more about alcohol than a chef from prior decades?
I'd say yes. It's on trend to know how to pair your beverages with the courses that you're doing. Right now, we are offering the chef's table. Yes, I actually have one this evening. You don't have to get the wine pairings or anything like that, but it's very helpful for me to know more.
You don't have to get them at the chef's table.
No, you don't have to.
Right.
We definitely suggest it. It adds to the experience. It makes it fuller flavored. It's just if you get the wine pairings, you're getting something specifically to the dish that I have made up that day. It's nothing that we've planned for before. We taste wines and eat the dish together, me and my general manager, Kendall Moore. He is excellent with choosing wine pairings. I admittedly don't know as much about it as I'd like to, but he is constantly teaching me every day about flavors, about different grape varietals, and ways to pair it with my dishes.
How about at Boar's Head and Bavarian Chef, do you feel that, because both of you, obviously, Jerome, been at Bavarian Chef for 40-plus years, and Dale, you've been at Boar's Head Inn for a couple decades?
No, Boar's Head has been running for a couple decades. My length of time there is a little shorter.
How... the two of you, has the need to know alcohol with the food changed in your length of time as chefs?
Well, I think the availability of different alcohols has increased since when we first started. I mean, I wasn't able to get a real German beer to Madison County in 74, and now we can get beers from all over the world to serve them, and wines. The wine selection has increased incredibly. Alcohols, you get all kinds of different schnapps, extracts that you can use. So definitely, and once again, the consumer's curiosity about food and food trends asks you to research this and find different drinks to pair. So yes, of course, from the 70s to today, there has been a huge shift.
Dale, do you do this, or does Boar's Head just hire a sommelier to come in and take care of it?
Well, you know, I think that the role of the chef is always evolving, right? Always changing, and we're asked to be in wear many hats, and having that kind of information about creating that memorable experience at the table, and you want to be able to talk elegantly about or eloquently about how that food and what the tannins in that red wine or any kind of beverage is going to compare off of the food. That's important for us to know. And, you know, I think that you're, as Chef Reed said, we're constantly evolving that and learning that. I'm not sure we'll ever be as comfortable on that side of the table as we are in the kitchen. But certainly that's a demand.
But isn't that what makes this profession so much fun, that it is constantly evolving? You've never learned everything in a kitchen.
That's that part this about, they ask the question, does it get repetitious for us?
Not at all.
Never.
It's every day is a new story. Every day is a new item coming in, or a new set of customers, new set of customer requests. That's what makes this so much fun and so challenging. And that's why I think we work so hard and we love doing this.
Correct.
Here's a question that I'm going to start with Dale. My favorite meal of the day is breakfast, from Pam. Do you have a suggested item to serve besides the standard omelet with unusual ingredients? And why do chefs always work dinners and never breakfasts?
Well, I'll tell you, Pam, I was in the kitchen at 5 o'clock this morning, and at the Boar's Head, we happen to think that breakfast is the most important meal of the day. We do what's called the study of breakfast. Being connected with the college, the study of breakfast is big for us. If you ask the question, what do I like to eat for breakfast, that's, donuts. I mean, who doesn't love that? But there's a lot of different ways to cook that.
You and I need to hang out more.
Yeah. And, grits in the South are so unique. They've made it long past the breakfast menu. But grits here for us at Boar's Head is a big deal. And breakfast is something that we do, I think, really well 7 days a week.
Reed, Red Pump Kitchen is only open at dinner except on Saturdays and Sundays, correct?
Correct. Saturday and Sunday we have brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. I like to do a blend because it's breakfast and lunch, but we'll do the classics. We have eggs on whatever you want. I just made a corned beef hash. That's my personal favorite. Left. On the breakfast menu. Mm. I got a 20-pound brisket in from a local farm called Foods for Thought.
Nice.
It's about 20 minutes away from here. And I cured it for about a week and cooked it down, and it makes I dice it up really tiny because I like that texture. I like the nice mushy texture, but when you fry it in a frying pan, just if you got it from the store, for example, crispiness. It's like crispiness on the top and bottom, but like this nice fluffy inside. We serve that with two eggs. That's definitely my favorite. But
making me hungry.
What I will say is that being an Italian chef, Italians don't typically eat your typical breakfast that we would eat here in America. They're going to have a cup of coffee, a biscotti, a piece of bread. They're not as much into sweets. And we obviously have to cater to the culture that we live in here in America. But if it was personally for me, I like to eat that way too. I ate fish yesterday for breakfast.
Awesome.
Here's a question. Let's see. I love this question. I could have put my name at the end of this, too. My most difficult skill in the kitchen is timing, getting everything to come out somewhere near the same time so things aren't cold when the last items are ready. Without resorting to casseroles, do you have suggestions for learning improvement?
That's a difficult one. I mean, timing is probably the most important part of running a kitchen, getting all the working parts to work as one machine and rolling out the item at the exact same time and rolling all the items out at the exact same time. So you just have to pick your items that take the longest, start them. While you're working them, you have to learn to multitask, start your next item, turn that one, go over to the next one, and until that very last touch. So
in the kitchen, you have multiple stoves and burners and people.
Exactly.
And so Catherine, I'm assuming, does not.
But you on your own, you pick your items. You pick what takes the longest, what you can start, what you don't have to pay attention to. Pay attention to the next one, and it's just a timing thing. And find out the things that you can prepare in advance and keep warm, as opposed to the things that have to be sautéed immediately and immediately served. So get your mashed potatoes out of the way, get your string beans out of the way, put them in the warming oven, and then work on your meats and your quick fries.
At Thanksgiving, I was told you have to make something the day before and put it in the fridge. You can't have the kitchen, you can't have the oven on Thanksgiving Day. And I was like, oh, okay, all right. So be it. That's what I was told by you know, my wife's family, which is where the Thanksgiving was being held. All right. 56 after, so let's try and knock out one or two of these other ones. I can go to the farmer's market for produce, but where do I go for meats? Which grocery store is the best? That's from Carl.
I'd have to say, with the Charlottesville farmer's market right now, meats are a big part of it, actually. There's a lot of tents that are set up there that they're selling local chicken and duck and eggs. You won't really find much more besides that. I think there's one vendor that serves that sells beef products, but you can certainly go there. I love going there. I go there every Saturday morning, and actually I've gone with my general manager again. And we go and we look for something cool to put on the menu for the night, and we order, we buy a few, and then we just sell them that night. Other than that, I would say Whole Foods has a really good selection for the at-home buyer.
Dale?
Well, you know, I'll tell you, I don't do a whole lot of grocery shopping at the larger chain brand grocery stores, so I may be limited on advice on where to find local proteins from that level of consumer. I mean, I know where I buy them, but that's a different level. But I would say that just about in this community, I think you might be able to find local lamb at that same farmer's market. And, you know, there's something to said about there's a local meat shop here, I believe, that processes some products. But
James.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I.
Do people still go to Reed's?
Mm-hmm.
I know when I was in the restaurant market, people used to go to Reed's Market on Preston to buy a lot of their proteins.
Sure, small artisan butchers, I think, would always be my choice.
All right, 58 after the hour. So let's just finish up with talking about restaurant week. Again, we are talking about January 19th through the 28th. You can buy your tickets at various restaurants for $25 and $35. $1 per meal does go to Blue Ridge Area Food Bank. Gentlemen, do you get to take any time off to go to participate and go to another restaurant for this?
Fortunately, I'm off on Mondays, so we always, every restaurant week, we try to get one restaurant in that we haven't tried before, and restaurant week is such a great opportunity because I think the restaurant is trying to feature what it's best at, and it's a good time to go see this new restaurant. And so we try to, I haven't decided, there's 39 restaurants to pick from this year, so I'm not quite sure which one we're going to go to this year. I've seen some very good menus, and the choice is really hard.
All right. Jerome Tovitz from the Bavarian Chef, Dale Ford from Boar's Head Inn, and Reed Owen from Red Pup Kitchen. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake Up Call, only on WPVC LP Charlottesville.